Today's daf in Mesechet Menachot brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh is daf Chof Tet. And yesterday we learned the Tzura of the menorah as it's built along with the measurements of each particular kaftor, perach, and gaviyah. Now you'll note that on the kanim we didn't really have any kind of indication as to how these things are spread out. We're just assuming that the top of each kana of the kana was similar since it each kana included three gvim and a kaftar and a thera, which sounds exactly like what the middle one had on its top within the three top tvachim. So we would assume that that's the way for just reasons of pure aesthetics, that the top of the kanim, each one would match the top of the kana emtsa'i, which was the gufa shel menorah. But, I mean, that's an assumption. There's also a little illustration that the Rambam apparently made with his own hands in his manuscript, and he shows that the gvim and the kaftar beferach on each one of these kanim, obviously it was the classic Rambam picture of the kanim being straight at diagonals and not curved, but he's got them scattered along the entirety of the each one of those kanim. So don't know whether, you know, it's meant to be a precise kind of depiction, because in his depiction, there's each top of the kaneh doesn't have the top of the kaneh reaching all the way to the same level as the emtsa'i. But that, you know, it just could be because he wanted to conserve space. But in any event, so we don't have a precise picture, but we have the dinim. So if this were ever to be remanufactured, like it was in the Yimei Akash Manayim and so on, so we have the dinim that would allow us a little bit of artistic leeway to do it the way we want, as long as we have all of these components. So we got up to yesterday, Omar Rav, Govhasha Menorah Tish'at Tvachim. That's where we're up to today. And you recall that yesterday we learned that according to Shmuel, the menorah was actually 18 Tvachim high, and we had worked out precisely what went in each place. And here comes on Rav to tell us that the menorah was only 9 tvachim high, which is a little bit strange, because since, as Reb Shimi Bar Chiya, who was Rav's grandson, points out to him that in the Mishnah and Tumid it says, Even aita lifnei menorah, shealeha hakohen homeid, and it has shalosh ma'alot. So there's three stairs on this large stone that the Kohen is going to stand on, because he has to climb up the stairs in order to be meitiv et ha'nerot. Now, if according to you, the whole menorah was only 9 tvachim high, I mean, like, you know, what's that? About 2.5 feet, you know, 3 feet. I mean, why in the world would we need anything to stand on? If anything, that would make it very difficult to have to bend down and light the menorah. It doesn't make any sense. So it must be that Shmuel is right and that the menorah actually was tall enough to require these three steps in front of it. Omar Leh. So we often find that when Reb Shimi Bar Chiya asks something to Rav or says something to Rav, he had this very sweet relationship. So he used to call him, you Shimi boy. So he said, Shimiat, he says to him again, you Shimi boy, you should understand what I mean. Kikamina, obviously, what I was talking about was Misvat Kanim Vilamala. I was talking about a menorah that is the main section of the menorah. Now, the main section of the menorah, it's, in a sense, Rav is saying, look, I look at that first 9 tefachim, which brings us up to where we had the first break at the top of that kaftar that was at the bottom of those shnei kanim. That's 9 tefachim. And that is sort of like more of the foot of the menorah. It's from that point on, that's what I'm calling the menorah, the place where it starts expanding, going up. And is there an afkamina lahalacha? Possibly. Some suggest that according to Rav, if he says the menorah was 9 tefachim, so he means even if you have all the other variations. So let's say we said if you made it out of other metals yesterday, according to the Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, that it could be made out of wood. So then these particular midot don't apply, and it can be made from pieces, all of those distinctions. So it may be nogea that. In other words, the Rav is saying all of that's very true, but there is a certain minimum to the total size of the menorah. You'd have to make it at least 9 tefachim high, possibly. Possibly. I'm just conjecture, which the Achronim have. So he was talking about only I see we've got some rather elderly people over here that are interfering. Well, it's always nice to be brought down to earth, huh? Okay. So the next thing that we had is the zahav that was used historically to make the menorah. Now, Shlomo HaMelech, of course, he made himself 10 menorahs over there, and he, besides that menorah, and that was a very expensive undertaking. And in fact, it says in Divrei HaYomim that this really sort of wiped out Shlomo HaMelech's money. At least that's what it seems to say. It says, Vayas et menorot ha-zahav eser, all of them kemishpatam. So he made these additional 10 menorot that were the same dinim as the main menorah. And he had five on one side of the Heichal and five on the other side of the Heichal. And then it continues on to talk about Amenorot, Venerotehem, and so on. Lifnei Hadvir, Zahav Sagur. So Zahav Sagur, elsewhere the Gemara says, this was such a high quality gold that when one store would open up in town that was selling this kind of gold, every other store would have to shut down. So it's called Zahav Sagur. Okay. So now, then it says that the Perach and the Neirot and the Milka Chaim, all of these different parts of the menorah, they basically were michelot zahav. Now, what is michelot zahav? What does that mean? I mean, it just sounds like it comes from the word like a kala, which is to complete things up. But what does it mean? My michelot zahav. Omer Vami, well, that's exactly what it does mean. It means that this used up every last drop of the zahav sagur that Shlomo had. I mean, obviously, besides the other kelim and the things that it specifies was used for the palace, and but that was it. He ran out of this very, very high quality gold. The Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Eser Menorot Asa Shlomo, and every one of those Eser Menorot was so pure, the gold, that in order to make just one, Kol Achat V'Achat, he started off with 1,000 kikar of normal mined gold. And he refined it 1,000 times until out of that 1,000 kikar, he was left with one kikar, and that was the kikar that he actually used to produce his gold. Amy, is that though? Is that true? I mean, it says, V'chol klei mashkeh melech Shlomo zahav, V'chol klei beit yahar halvanon, zahav sagur, ein kesev nechshav v'nei Shlomo l'meuma. I mean, it does say that in the days of Shlomo, the streets were paved with gold. And basically, the silver wasn't even looked at. That wasn't worth anything. So, I mean, it seems to be saying if he had all of his drinking cups on his table were made out of gold, how could this be Michale Zahav Shlomo? No, but you didn't pay attention. I said Zahav Sagur. Michelot Zahav means that it used up all of his very high quality gold, and that was the gold that was refined 1,000 times over, and that used it up. But what you're saying doesn't make sense. I mean, you're telling me that you could reduce gold 1,000 times? You start off with 1,000 kikar, and then you keep refining it, and you would lose each time you put it into that furnace, you'd end up losing that much? But Rabbi Yehuda says that there was a maaseh, Vayta menorat beit hamikdash yiterah el shomoshe. So they once made a weight of the renewed menorah, and they found that it weighed one dinar zov kurdikini more than the menorah of Moshe Rabbeinu of the kikar zahav at the time of the midbar. And so what they did was, they figured, okay, so it's apparently not as pure as it ought to be. They put it into the tanur, into a kiln, obviously, 80 times, shmonim pa'amim, and that reduced it from the extra dinar zahav for the kini, reduced it to exactly the correct kikar. Now, that should mean, according to what we said before, if 1,000 times get it done, from 1,000 to 1. So this should have reduced things close to 10% and 8% if it's 80 times. So something's fishy over here because the amount of a dinar kurdikini was almost nothing according to the Gemara elsewhere. It's mashman that the dinar, the guinea, was the same size as the isra italki, which is ridiculous. I mean, so that would mean that you're basically reducing it by one, something like 300,000th of a kikar in 80 times. Well, that doesn't add up, because then in 1,000 times, you're not going to take 1,000 kikar and reduce it to one. So how do you explain that? Well, I explained that once you refined it completely, which was the Zahav Sagur of Shlomo HaMelech, given to Koi, once it's refined to the extent that it has no dross in it at all, you can't keep going down, and therefore that was the maximum that it was reducible. When the Torah speaks about Al HaMenorah HaTehorah, what does it mean to say Al HaMenorah HaTehorah Yaroch HaTamirot Bifnei Hashem Tamid, this in the Bahalotecha? Well, of course it's Tehorah. We know that it's made out of Zahav Tahor, so it's not going to tell me that. So does it mean, what, that it wasn't a Kabbalah Tumah? I mean, obviously we're not going on the Tumah. So what might it mean? It means She'erdu Ma'aseha Mimakom Tahorah. It means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu actually brought a menorah and showed it to the menorah, that menorah from the Shamayim, in order for Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to understand how to make that menorah. Now, wait a minute. It says the same thing about the shofar. You're going to tell me that when it says Al HaShulchan HaTahor, it also means She'erdu Ma'asav Nimakom Tahor? I mean, it doesn't say that anywhere, does it? I mean, it doesn't say that it was brought down the way the menorah was. And over there, we know that it means completely some, as that beautiful drasha, which is, you know, why does it say in the Torah that the Shulchan was Tahor? To teach me that there is possible for the Shulchan to be Tameh. And that's a chiddush. To say Tahor, Miklal Shu Tameh, it is Shayach to Kabbalah's Tumah. And if it's going to be Mekabal Tumah, so then you'd have to be Metairit. So it makes sense to use the word Tahor. And why is that important? So we'll see in a moment from Rish Lakish. But if that's what it means with the Shulchan, then maybe that's all that it means in the menorah, that it could be Tameh, and therefore we need to call it Torah. Now, come on. I mean, Bishop Ahasam, the story of using the word Tahor by the Shulchan is a big chiddush, because it teaches me what Rish Lakish told me. The Omer Rish Lakish, Ma'idech Pival HaShulchan HaTahor Bifal Shu Tameh. What's the point of teaching us that the Shulchan can be Mekabel Tumah? Because it doesn't make sense. That's the point. Isn't it true that the Shulchan is a Kli Eitz Asur L'Nachat? It's a Kli made of wood. And the Torah compares wood in the list of the things that are Tameh in Parshas Shrotzim, the Shmoneh Shrotzim. So it talks about Sak and Eitz together, meaning that a Kli Eitz has to be Mitzteltel. It has to be able to be moved about the same way that Sak is something that you move about. And therefore, it should not be Mekabel Tumah, and it's Eino Mekabel Tumah. So how does it say over here, the Shulchan needs to be Tahor? It can't be Mekabel Tumah anyway. Ela Melameh, this teaches us something very beautiful, says Reish Lakish, that the Shulchan was actually lifted up on the Moadim, when everybody would come to the Beis HaMikdash, bring their korbanos. They would lift up the lechem aponim on the shulchan, and they would say to the people that were there to be oil regel, Re'u chibatchem lifnei hamakom, see how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves you. How could I see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves me? Mar chibatchem, oh, that's Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, neis gadol, ba'aseb lechem aponim. The lechem aponim was always there as an expression of an open miracle. And what was that? Siluko kesiduro. If you took it off a week later, it was piping hot, as if it had just come out of the tanur and had just been put on there as it was a week earlier. Shenema, because it says, Lasum lechem chom biyomi lo kecho. that we put on warm bread at the time that we take it off. So you could actually see the steam rising from the lechem. They would pick it up and they would see here it's like almost a week later and the lechem is fresh. And they saw that that means because since we have the Hashros HaShchina in the Beis HaMikdash, we know that there is no normal functioning of the physical dimensions that we exist in. And just like we saw that the Mokum HaOrein Eina Min Hamida, there's no way that you can find the Oren within three-dimensional space. The same thing is true about time. And there's no entropy in the Beis HaMikdash, which shows that you're talking about something that exists in a hyperspace, hypertime. And therefore, it's a Mokum that is not part of our normal existence, but it's a place for the Mokum HaShchina. Where else did we see that there was no entropy? Another raya to the Hashros HaShchina, which was the Ner HaMa'aravi, which would continue to burn, and therefore it too was free from the same issues of entropy. So that was a sign of tremendous chavivus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was actually dwelling within us inside of our Beis HaMikdash. That's all very nice when it comes to the Shulchan, because that's a big chiddush, because the Shulchan is a kli that is made out of wood. And therefore, it ought not to be mekabel tumah if it isn't lifted up. But what would be the point of saying that by the menorah? I mean, the menorah is made out of metal. Metal kelim are mekabel tumah. It's nothing to do with whether they're set any one place or they move. So elahacha Torah michlal shi'itmeah. That's what you want to teach me? That's pshita. Of course, the menorah could be mekabel tumah. It's a normal kli matachot, and kli matachot are mekablim tumah. So what's the point? It must mean the menorah Torah sheyardu ma'aseh. That means that the menorah was actually brought down for Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to see it as it was. Tanya, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yudaimer, Aron shall eitz, v'shulchan shall eitz, menorah shall eitz, yardu min ha'shamayim. It wasn't only the menorah. It was actually the orein and the shulchan and the menorah. They all came down min ha'shamayim for Moshe Rabbeinu in order to be able to see them and to make the similar design. Sh'nema re'eh v'aseh v'tavnitam asher atah mor'eh bahar. And the way that you actually saw it, the model of it on the har, that's the way you should be. Excuse me, but it says the same lashon about the actual Mishkan itself. I mean, it says, "Vahakimotata Mishkan kemishpato asher ha'areit bahar." You're trying to tell me that the whole Mishkan came down in a Mishkan shalish? I mean, I never heard anybody say that. It was only said about the kelim, Elchanami? No, of course not. We read the pasuk again. Hakimotata Mishkan kamishpato asher ha'areit bahar. You were taught the dinim of the Mishkan on the har, but over here it says b'tavnitam, according to the model. What's the matter with you? It's two totally different ideas. So one of them is the abstracted mishpat, and the other one is the very, very physical model. That's the tavnit, and therefore it means that it must have been that there was an actual model, so to speak, shalesh. Obviously, because there was no physical and actual normal physical model, but we call that shalesh. It was like pure energy. Omer Rav Chiya bar Ava, Omer Rav Yochanan. You know who showed Moshe Rabbeinu these designs? That was Gavriel HaMalach, and he's the one, he's the Malach who is on the Eish. And he was Chagur Kamin Pesikiyaya. He was wearing one of those metal worker aprons, and that was an indication as to his function in this particular gestalt. We find that the different Malachim took on different gestalt, and they always would have an indication so that the Navi would know what is the meaning of this particular Malach. So like we find with the Malach of the that was showing Yecheskel around, he came in the gestalt of an architect, and he was wearing one of those laser measuring things in his ear. It's sort of weird, but these are not Christian little floating beings, So anyway, so that was the Gavriel Gestalt that came. And now, how do we know that? Because if you say Zeh Ma'aseh HaMenorah, when we find the word Zeh, it means somebody is pointing to it. What does Vizeh mean? Just say Ma'aseh HaMenorah. V'zeh is a focus. And that means there's got to be an agency, a focus. So it must mean that the Malach actually was showing him that. It seems that there were shlosha dvarim ayu kashim lo l'moshe. There were three things that Moshe Rabbeinu had a rough time understanding, and he needed some physical agency to make it clear. Acher ala HaKadosh Baruch Hu be'etzba'o. This is if HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him with a finger a model of what it was that was meant. What are the three things? Menorah, like we just said. Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh, the question over there is, as uses the Lashon of Zeh, HaKadosh HaZeh, which means that this particular size of the renewing moon is what it is that's considered to be enough for you to be Mekadesh. So that's the Kazera Eva Kadesh, the famous drasha, which we're making over here. So it means that it was, so to speak, this is what you need to see. And also Shratzim, to be able to tell the difference of the Shmoneh Shratzim, where you've got, I mean, literally thousands of very similar species, and the Torah is makbid only on one particular eight of these, I should say, particular nivroim that are included in the din of the Shmoneh Shratzim. It's very difficult for Moshe Rabbeinu to understand particularly what the description of these minim are. And so, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to show him. So where do we see this? From analyzing the pasuk, menorah. Dechsiv hazeh ma'aseh menorah. So obviously it's being pointed to. Rosh Chodesh. HaKadosh hazeh lachem Rosh Chodeshim. Shratzim. Dechsiv hazeh lachem hatameh. V'yesh amrim, some say also hilcho shchita, because it says v'zeh asher ta'aseh al ha'mizbeach, and since there are some various, we'll be getting soon to, in Chulin, some very, very specific structures that define the area of Shechita, it was difficult to give it over just as a theory, because the Gemara says elsewhere. I mean, what was Moshe Rabbeinu Knigni Isa? I mean, like, what was he? He was a hunter, he was a professor of biology, or what? Like, well, how was he supposed to know what these things are unless he was exposed to them? I mean, he didn't have the background to be able to tell you the difference between all of these different kinds of, you know, as they say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu must be awfully fond of beetles. So, I mean, if he's going to tell you the different kind of hundreds of thousands of various beetle species in the Torah, so must be that it was actually shown. This is the way in which you are able to present the Korbanos on the Mizbeach, means, and I don't know why the Gemara doesn't bring this, but it says Ka'asher Tziviticha, which means that there was a way in which you were instructed specifically to do the Maaseh Shechita. So that, I mean, everything is Ka'asher Tziviticha, but I don't know, the Gemara doesn't bring that part. Let's move on to the next piece of the Mishnah. The next piece is that the two Shema v'haya im Shamoa in the Mezuzah are ma'akvat zo'atzo, and even any little bit, even afil k'tav echad, one letter, will destroy the whole Mezuzah. Afil k'tav echad ma'akvat. So, I mean, isn't that pshita? I mean, it's sort of, what is the meaning of the word uchtavtam al mizuzot betecho visharecha? I mean, either you have written them or you haven't written them. I mean, if it isn't the nature of the ktav, so then why would I think it's kosher? Well, how would we be able to draw some sense of what ktiva is if it isn't a complete ktiva? Now, the Gemara seems to be relying, which is a little bit strange, because the Maaseh, we'll see later on, all of these things are learned out of the drasha of uchtavtam means katavtam. Katavtam means that it's a complete, it's a whole ketiva without anything missing. But if we didn't have that drasha yet, why would the Gemara say it's pshita if we actually darshan it? I mean, the mashmaut over here is that it's not really a drasha uchtavtam, it's just logic. It either is or it isn't. I mean, it can't be sort of a ktiva and be called uchtavtam. So isn't it pshita that it would have to be whatever needs to be written? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav, what this actually means is to tell me that not a whole letter, of course that is clear that that would not be ktiva if a letter was missing, But it means that even the kotzer shel yud, even though the tiny point, whatever a kotz is, a sharp point of the yud. So now we already get into a big machlokus about what precisely is meant with the kotzer shel yud. Now all of the dinim that we're talking about on this daf, these dafim, are actually very, very nogea lahalacha as to what is the kotz of the yud. Now, if you take a look at the tsura of the yud, it actually, the way in which we write a yud incorporates three completely different shitas about what the kotz shel yud is. So according to Rashi, the kotz shel yud is the piece of the yud that actually forms in our modern yud. It actually forms a little rounded right side, sharp end, but it's rounded inwards in the yud. And he says that's what the kotz of the yud is. The Rabbi Tam adds that a yud has to have a little bit of a kotz going down on the left side, not the kotz shel yud that the Rashi is speaking about over here. And that is a bigger chiddush because it doesn't seem to be part of the tsura of the yud. So, okay, that's how he understands it. Lemaisa, if you don't put that there and you just have a completely sharp end, that is to say, it's a completely square edge, that would be kosher. And the Rush says the kotz shel yud is actually the top of the yud that comes up as also something like a kotz. So it goes up sharply on the left side of the top of the yud. So essentially, we have three kotzim shel yud that we incorporate in our ketiva. And that's what the chiddush is. And if that, even that tiny piece is missing, then even that will passel the mezuzah. Well, I don't understand. I mean, either that is the shape of a yud or it's not. So that's nami pshita. I mean, if a yud is not written like a yud, then how would that be ketiva tama? So again, why do we need to have the Mishnah pointing that out? Because it means that everything has to be exactly as required, no? All right, so you know what? Then maybe what it's coming to tell me is like the other sheet of Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. That is the Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, a new din, that kol ot, she'in gvil, mukafla mi'arba ruchotea, pesula. Now, according to Rashi, this halacha means that you cannot have, this is called, Gavi, keep this as a musag. It's called mukaf gvil. Every letter has to be mukaf gvil. It has to be surrounded by its background material, whatever that is, klaf or gvil or so on. The gvil is the pure total skin. So it needs to be surrounded. Now, according to Rashi, what that means, Rashi doesn't bring any other element. We'll see. There seems to be rias to Rashi's approach. The mukaf gvil means that it cannot be touching an adjacent os. So that, because if it were, then it is not set aside as itself and therefore loses its tsura of the od. So any touch, any contact between one letter and another letter means that both of those letters become tsulais because they're not their selves, they're not mukaf gvil. And that's what it's referring to. Other Rishonim learned that mukaf gvil also means that it can't be at the edge. In other words, you have got to have an actual parchment on the side all around of the oat. So if one part of the oat is at the very edge of the parchment that you're using, so I'm using the word parchment because there are different three different types of parchments. So to use a particular word in Hebrew, it's easier to say the English because later on we'll get to what the different ways in which we process the actual skin, what we call it, technically speaking. But if you don't have some kind of parchment all around, then it would be puzzle, which would include even writing it too close to the edge so that part of it touches the edge and therefore doesn't have parchment. It's got airspace on the other side. Omar Ashyan Bar Nadbach, Mishmei de Rav Yehuda. If the inside of a hay has got a hole in it, it's kosher. But if the yerech of the hay has a hole in it, means that there's a space going through its leg, then it would be possible. Now, what does that mean exactly? Omer Rabbi Zera, Nedidima Farshli Minei de Ravuna. Rabbi Yaakov says, well, you heard it from Ravuna, I heard it from Rav Yehuda, but Both of them were given the same explanation as the Kabbalah of what this word means, that nikev tocho shel hei kasher, that if the inside, so the inside would mean the actual blank area, and it has a hole in that, so then it would be kosher. Now the question is again, how big is the hole? Because you see, if you don't hold of Rashi, then if the hole is big and it touches the ksav, then you should have a problem of mukav kviya. This is one of the riyas that's brought to Rashi. Since the Gemara doesn't say how big that hole is, it's mashma that it could even be the inside of the hay, which would mean that the inner part of the hay is airspace instead of gvil. So then how would that be mukav gvil according to the others? Okay, otherwise you'll have to learn that it's talking about that it doesn't literally touch. Or you could learn that mukav gvil only means the outside, which is what defines the oat from outside. But if it's the inside of the oat, that's not part of the definition of the oat, because the oat itself defines its inner space. So even those who hold that mukav gvil means that you need to have the actual skin, that doesn't mean that the toch of the hay needs to be with skin. So there's a lot of different approaches to how to apply this to the halakha. But if the leg on either side, the yarech of the hay, has got a hole in it, then it depends. Im nishtayer bo kishiyur ot kitana, if there's enough space over there that it's got a yud, you'd be able to write a yud, and that means, a yud means the entire yud, including the piece that comes down. So it's not as small as you'd think. It's not just a dot. So if there was a space in the right leg, then you have to have the space of the yud that is on top, and that would make it kosher. But if not, imlav, then it would be possible. Now, there's a completely different shot which Rashi brings, and that is that the tocho shel hay is basically the left side of the hay, which anyway is hanging, and the yerek shel hay is the strong leg, the right leg, that is supporting the hay. So then what the Gemara would be saying is that I don't care how much space there is on that left side, but I do care about how long the right yerech is, because it has, if part of it is not connected, then it's not part of the oat. So therefore, there needs to be a minimum shear of the yud that's coming down before it can be disconnected. Agra, who was Hamua, he was the father-in-law of Reb Abba, and he had a case in which his tefillin, where Ifsikele Kara Dehe, he was missing in his tefillin the letter of the He, which was in the word of Vayomer Moshe El Ha'am. So the He of Ha'am had exactly this problem. It separated the yerech of the hay on the right side into two pieces. And the question was whether the remaining piece, because the piece on the bottom is not mechubar, and therefore it's not part of the oat. And the question is this still kosher? And he comes to Rabbi Abba to ask him. And Rabbi Abba said, imishtayer bo kishir ot ktana, which is a yud, then it's kosher. Imlav pasul, which is consistent with the Gemara that we just said. So if the top of the right-hand side, yerech of the hay, is as large as a yud, then the hay could be kosher, even though it's not, it doesn't continue on. Rami bar Tamri. Now, this is a problem, because the Gemara in Chulin says that Rami bar Tamri is not the father-in-law of Rami bar Dikule. He is Rami bar Dikule. And he's got a lot of different names that the Gemara goes through over there. And obviously, if you call him the date, or you call him the date tree, he's basically, it's the same name. So some called him date, and some called him Dekel. But anyway, so he had a problem in his tefillin. And there, he had a hole in the vav, which turned the word vayaharog which was in the pasuk of the story of Paro, Kikshah Paro L'Shacheni V'Yaharog Hashem Kol B'chol Be'eretz Mitzrayim. So the Vav of the V'Yaharog was missing its bottom part. So the question is, the top part looked a little bit like a Yud instead of like a Vav. So he wanted to know, is it kosher, even though it's missing its bottom part? And Atala Kame de Rebbe Zera. So now in these cases, when we say Ifsikalei, the Mepharshim say that Ifsikalei means that there was a hole in the parchment, so that when it was written, it actually was left with a hole in the oath. But the problem is, if that's the case, of course, then Lechora, it's not Mukav Kvil. And this is another raya that's brought to Rashi's job, that Mukav Kvil doesn't mean that there can't be a hole. It means that you can't be nogea one oath to the other. So maybe this is indeed a raya to Rashi. Okay, there are many other ways of explaining the difference between the hole that we're talking about over here. There's an awful lot of different shitas about every single one of these things, including one shot that says if it was first okay, and then in the end the ink falls off of that space, that still remains okay as long as it wasn't that way originally. And look, a lot of different approaches. So I'm not going to bring up literally entire books have been written just on these couple of dapim. So I'm just bringing up some of the issues that you should be aware of how much this is nogea.
Anyway, at least we have an inkling.
Very good. So, very good. Crazy, just crazy. So anyway, he comes to Rebbe Zera to find out what the din is over here. Because, I mean, there was a shear of a yud. Would that be enough? So Rebbe Zera said to him, well, if it's read as if it's a yud, then it's a different word because it's not ve'yaharog, it's yehareg, you know? So, I mean, we have to find out whether it reads properly. And how do you do that? So Rebbe Zera said, bring a kid who just learned how to read. This kid is not overly bright. So he's not going to look at the word and try to figure out contextually what it means. Because obviously, if the kid looks at it contextually, he's going to see that it means that God was killed. You know, Yehareg Hashem, he understands it's insane. So he'll, by definition, he knows that can't be what it says. So he'll fix it in his mind to read it as Vayarog. Well, we don't want a kid that reads by looking ahead and figures out the context. We want a kid that just knows how to figure out what the letters look like, and he sounds out those letters. So how will he read it? So he should be lo chachim v'lo tipesh, and he correlate v'yaharog, I mean, it was really v'yaharog, but that's not the point. So if he reads it as a vav, so then it's kosher. But if he reads it as a yud, so then it says yehareg. If it says yehareg, then it's pasul. Omer Rav Yehuda Amara. B'sha'ah she'ala Moshe l'moro. Now, we've been talking about the tzura of these otiyot. Now, let's talk about the dinim of the tagim. So when Moshe Rabbeinu came up to the Shamayim, and he finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu writing the Sefer Torah that is going to be given to Moshe. So he's Yoshev v'kosher ketarim l'otiyot. The Torah is already written, and here's HaKadosh Baruch Hu fixing it up. And that, by the way, is the halacha. If you're missing tagim, you can actually add the tagim subsequently, because they're not part of the actual tzuras ha'os itself. And you still have ketivat tama without the tagim, which is why they're not ma'akim. So he finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu adding these tagim. Is Yoshev the kosher ketarim la'otiyot. It's like putting little crowns on some of the letters of the Sefer Torah. Somebody making you problems over here? I mean, you got to finish your old Sefer Torah. Who is complaining that it's not good enough and that you can't give it the way it is? Oh, Marlo, well, there is a guy. He's not here yet, but he's going to appear after a lot of generations go by. Adam Achad Yesh Atid Liot B'Sof Kamadorot. And his name is Akiva Ben Yosef. And he's going to make me a lot of trouble because he is Ati Didrosh al Kol Kotz Vekotz Tilin Tilin Shal Halachot. He's going to write Otiot to Rabbi Akiva, and he's going to darshan all kinds of halachas based on every single one of these little tagin. And because of that, I have to make sure it's all done right. I'd love to see a guy like that. It's incredible. Amarlo, enter into the space behind you of that virtual world and take a seat in Rabbi Akiva's future shir. And so in the great projector room of Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu turns around and he finds himself in Rabbi Akiva's shir room. Well, he couldn't get to the front of the room because he couldn't pass any of the tests. So he was at the end of eight shurot. So he was in the eighth row. And he didn't understand a word. He couldn't figure out what they're talking about in the conversations between Rabbi Akiva and his Talmidim. And he sort of felt pretty bad about that. Tashash kocho, yad chalishos hadas. And, all right, what can I do? I don't get it. Anyway, there was one thing that Rabbi Akiva was explaining, and his Talmidim said to him, but Rabbi, how do you know that? So, that's how Halacha L'Moshe Misinai. Oh, whew. Well, says Moshe to himself, at least I have some place in this, you know. So he felt better when he heard that. So Nityash Vadato. Okay. He leaves the projection room and comes back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, that was amazing. Ribono Shel Olam, Yesh Lecha Adam Kazeh. I don't get it. You got a guy like that and you want to give the Torah with an idiot like me? Vata Noten Torah Al Yadi? Amar Lo, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, shut up over here. You can't, there are things that you can't understand. And when you can't understand, you don't talk about them. Okay. So just keep your mouth shut. Kachala b'machshava lefanai. This was my vision that is not meant to be. It's a machshava. It doesn't come into the pay yet. And this is my beautiful vision of what the world is supposed to be. It's not meant to be understood yet. Amar lefanav, okay, I'll accept that, but I'd love to see the end of the story. Are you sure? Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, heritiani torato, you've shown me the incredible Torah. Could I see his sakhar? Well, says HaKadosh Baruch, if you're sure about that, you can go back into the projection room. Chazor le'achorecha. So Moshe turns around, and he sees shoklin b'saroba makulin, that the Romans have sent the flesh of Rabbi Akiva's body to be mevuzah, to be sold in a butcher shop. Amar lefanav, ribono shel olam, zo Torah v'zo Sarah. Amar lo shtok, kach ala b'machshava lefanai. And we've explained many times that this is back the b'tchila ala b'machshava livrosa b'midas hadin, and this is the original machshava. It's not something that can be understood. So getting now to these Kitarim, which are the tagim of the otiot. So there are shiva otiot, tzrichot shlosha ziyunim. Now, there's seven different otiot, and the truth is that actually equals nine, because there's two tzurot, because it includes the sha'atnez and gates. So we have the shin and the ayin, and the tes, and the nun. Now, nun, obviously, has got two different kinds of nuns. So you could have the nun pshuta, the nun kfufa, both are included. The zayin, the gimel, and both forms of the tzadik, because you have the tzadik pshuta also and the tzadik kfufa. So that means that there's really nine different surata otiyot that require three of these little tagim, and each one of this, my focus exactly how they should look, whether they come back from one point and they go in three different directions, or whether they're all going straight up, or whether they're shaped like straight, or they're shaped like little zions. So Rav Ashi explains, I actually saw Sifrei Torah that were written. Rav had a lot of input into the ciphering, and he had a school of Safrei Davkani, These were Sifrei Torah that had been written by the Dafkaniks. I mean, these are guys that if there's a Chumrah of the Chazon Ish, then it's in there, let me tell you. And there's nothing that they left out. And I saw that there were all kinds of weird stuff there. They were Chatre Le Legage de Chet. So they made the roof of a Chet into a Chutra, which is like a, Rashi learns it means it's like the cane that you rest on. And according to Rashi, the Chutra, if you take a look at the Surah, most of the different prints have a Rashi in there, with the Chet, the left side of the Chet sticking up like a cane and thick as part of the letter, not like a tongue. And that was the pshat that Rashi has. The pshat that we incorporate in terms of our Sifrei Torah is actually the Rabbeinu Tam's pshat, which is the complex ksiva of the os that is a vav and a zayin connected with a inverted V so that it looks like it's going up to the shamayim in the middle. And that means it's like a bent over back. So, or the way Tosfos learns it, it means like the word chatre is what you use for a hump on a camel, which is the chaturta of the camel. So it means like a hump. In any event, that's the way we write our Sifrei Torah, like the Rabbeinu Tam. And as far as the otiot that we talked about before, which were the shatnis gates, I mean, so that the pashtas, and this is the way the Shulchan Mishnah Berurah paskens, is that you're supposed to put on every single occurrence of any of the nine forms of shatnis gates, there should be these three ziyunim that look like little zions, and they basically come out on the left side, and they go upwards, but on the two sides, they go a little bit to the right and left, and the middle goes straight up, and they look like little zions. If you take a look at your mezuzahs, if you've got an open mezuzah, you'll see on every one of the shatnez getzes that that's what you've got. But there are many, many minhagim and mesereis about different osios that require tagging throughout the Sefer Torah that are not necessarily the shatnez gates. And these were they're put down in Sforim that we have that are supposed to be Kabbalah from the time of the Nevi'im and the Malachim. But in terms of the halacha, the Mishnah Berurah paskens that you, even though it's on the Hakev, you should definitely be very makbid to have on all of your shatnez gates letters the proper tagging. And you can go back and you can fix them afterwards.
Is this the difference between the Ashkenaz and the Sephardi?
There are differences in how they make it, but they're also makbid on this. And there are also the Sephardim that I mak here, the Sephardim, are also makbid on the Chutrei of the Chet. I've seen the Sephardim that, I know that's from the Syrians. It could be that the other Sephardim they have the Rashis or something like the Rashi says. The implication of that inverted V, which is the way Rabbeinu Tam has it, or the implications of that stick that's going up, is as if it's telling you, Chai, this Chet stands for Chai, and there is life and consciousness and being, Geruma Shel Olam. And they also, in those Sifrei Torah, I noted that Tolule Dekare the hay. I saw that the left side of the hay was not connected to the top of the hay, and that there was a hole between, and that's similar to the way we write a hay. And actually, that was Kidaboimine reviewed in the Siyam Rabbi Ami. So all of the discussion we had before about the difference between the left and right side of the hay was that issue. Now, the mashma'ut over years, this is another issue that has to do with the machlokas, the Rashi, and the Rabbeinu Tam. Because, I mean, if this is not the norm, so it means that the hay is kosher, even if the top of the hay and the leg of the hay on the left is connected. And then, of course, what makes the difference of a hay or a chet? Because that's one of the big things that the Gemara talks about. If any of the hays look like chets, so then it's going to pass for the sefer. And here's mashma that a hay is still a hay, even if it's got the leg is touching. So Okay, obviously, it could be that the difference of having that chutre would mean that a chet looks totally different than a hey, because it's not just a matter of whether it's connected or not on the left side. It's a totally different oath if you hold like the Rabbeinu Tam, and there would be no way to confuse a chet looking hey with a real chet that has the chutre in it.
Or, Rabbi looks on the WhatsApp, I posted a note in our Gemara from the Dead Sea Scrolls, where you can see this, and from the Aleppo Code from the 10th century, where they did this. Both cases, there is the chet and the hey. It's very interesting. The chet.
If you could say it in English, I would really appreciate it.
So
I caught a few words.
I posted from the Dead Sea Scrolls.
You posted
example.
It now?
Of examples of how they wrote the Chet and the Hay on the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Yeah.
And you can also see how they did it in the Aleppo Codex. Very interesting, like the Gemara is describing.
Right.
Rebbe made a comment about Vav and Zion together, and others say Zion and Zion together.
Right. Because if you take a look at the Tzura of the Oath, the right-hand side of the Chet does not have the square of the Zion. It goes down and it's curved on the bottom like a Vav. So that's some refer to it as a Vav in the Zion. This is also part of the dinim of the Ksiva of the Chet. Again, it goes beyond like our detail. Okay, I don't know, but that's taken from that edition of the Gemara that often has wrong pictures. So I don't know. I'm not really something, but it's possible. I mean, what I find in that edition is that it's almost a dafka, a wrong picture in every single illustration. So it could be this is right. I don't know. Barnea, does it look familiar?
Sorry, I didn't see it yet.
Oh, okay. All right. My turn. And this is Kedabarmine Revita Nesiyam Rabbi Ami. So why does it say, Bitchuba Hashem Adayad Ki Beka Hashem Tzur Olami? So first, he thought that he was just asking him, like, what is the meaning of the relationship of bitachon to the tzur olamim? So he just told him, it means if you're Tehillah, you're bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you should know that you can trust in olam hazeh, olam haba, and that's going to be like a shelter for you. Machzeh. Harelo machzeh b'olam hazeh ula olam haba. It'll be like a tzur. Said, I know that's what it means. That's not what I was asking you. Why does it say Bika? Shouldn't it say that if Bitchu Hashem Adayad, because Yudke Ka Hashem is the Tzur Olamim, but Bika doesn't make any sense. So what does it mean, Bika Hashem? Ah, that's a good question. That is the drasha of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Loi, the famous drasha, Elu Shnei Olamot Tzur Olamim, means that the two Olamot Shebara HaKadosh Baruch Hu, one of them was, they were both created Be Yud He, with the two letters, Yud and He. So one of them was a He, and one of them was a Yud. Now, that's Tzur Olamim, that's two worlds. I don't know which one is the He, and which one is the Yud. Eni Yodea Ima Olam Haba Be Yud V'Olam Hazeh Be He, or if the Olam HaZeh was Biyud and the Olam HaBo was Behe. But when we finally get to the part of Maaseh Bereishis that says, Ela Toldot HaShamayim V'aretz Behi Bar'am, which would read with that small A, Behe Bar'am. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created Shamayim V'aretz, which is Olam HaZeh, with the He. Aha! So then we now know, Ave Omer, Olam HaZeh was created with the He, and the Olam HaBa, therefore, must have been that which was created with the Yud. Why was Olam HaZeh created with a Hey? Mipnei ma nivra Olam HaZeh behei? Because Olam HaZeh is domelach sadra. It doesn't have, it's not closed. And it's open at the bottom. And the reason it's open at the bottom is because you're welcome to leave. And if you, in fact, decide that the world as it is not where you want to live, and you want to live like a bum, and go be homeless on the street and go into Chas V'Shalom, not our Tel Aviv view, but, you know, if you want to live in the Tel Aviv view, so then you leave the world And what can you do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves it up to you as to whether you want to live or you want to leave the world. And why is it that the leg on the left side is not connected to close it off? Because it always needs to leave an opening for somebody who wants to climb back in the world when he realizes that Tel Aviv U is not an environment. So, but can't you just go straight back into the world? I mean, why do you need to go around the edge and walk all the way up the left side of the hay and coming around the bend if you could just walk in where the place where you left? The Leil Bahach, go back in the way that you fell out. No, it doesn't work that way. Lo mistaya milta. People try that, but you can't really fight your way back in. As Reish Lakish pointed out, the Om Reish Lakish, my dichtiv, in the leitzim huyalitz. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow people who want to be cynical, go right ahead. But la'anavim yitein chen. People who are anavim, he will actually give the chen that they need, which means, ba'letaher misayinoto. Somebody who wants to become tohar, he is zocher to a very special siyata d'shmaya that helps him. But you see that he needs help. And it's very difficult to just battle your way in a world that's full of all types of nisyonos and misleading and insane emotions and backgrounds of where you came from that are completely raw, black, and hopeless. How are you going to get back in and fight all of that? And therefore, you need help. And if you need help, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu opened up that little area that allows you to go to the help counter and to get back in with a little bit of siyata d'shmaya so that you don't have to battle your way. And if you want to fall out, okay, then we give you an opening. Chas v'shalom, I'm not going to help you fall out. Unfortunately, you don't need help to fall out. So, baletame potchim lo. We leave it open for him. So that shita that we found in those Sifrei Torah is exactly the idea that we're mentioning over here. That, as we pointed out before, this is similar. This hay is similar to this drasha, Kedaboyimine reviewed in the Siyam Rabbi Ami, that leads us to understanding the opening at the top of the hay. So we're going all the way back to that original question. Now, there were two things. Oh, sorry, I didn't finish. That explains the hay of the Olam Hazeh. What about the Yud of Olam Haba? Well, you don't have many people there, and you therefore you have the Yud, which is small. Or Muatim could also mean they are Mamayat themselves, but that seems to be more the next piece. Why is the head of the Yud bent downwards? So again, this is the way Rashi understands this. It's referring not to the Rosh, but rather the Rosh of the right side. And that's, as we pointed out before, that right side is bent inwards, according to Rashi. So that's what it's referring to over here, that it's kafuf. And that's because tzaddikim, they are also, they're bent over because they're anovim. And why are they bent over? Ad kedei kach that we should see them as if they're broken. That's because mipnei ma'aseyim she'en domim zelazeh. Every tzaddik who sees another tzaddik in Olam Haba is brokenhearted, because everyone else that one sees has achieved things that you've never dreamt of, and therefore you see that. Oh my God! Here I thought I was so great. Look at this guy. Look at that guy. I never did anything like that. So it's a disaster. So you're always seeing things. And that's the idea of kol echad ve'echad is burned from the chupaser shel chaveray, because the unique achievements of each person are overwhelming, and there's not one tzaddik that's not going to feel on many accounts outdone, and therefore he's brokenhearted that he didn't use his time.
Do you ever read My Time I Say Taga with the Kesher?
When?
My Time Taga with the Kesher, Tzaddikim Muatim. Did you ever read that?
I'm not following, sorry.
Right after the Tamei Poschim Lo, the next My Time.
Which is what? Oh, I know you're right. I forgot the taga. I forgot. Yeah. You're right. Okay, let me go back. My taima is like taga. How come the hay also has on the left side? Now, the tag on the hay, if you take a look again at the Tzuras Ha'os, is not really at the edge, but it's over the whole of the hay. It's over where the leg bends in, which is on the angle. It's not just a straight leg. And why is it there? Because Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if this person who comes back in through that little hole and he does teshuvah, I am going to give him a little crown on his head. And that crown above that hole of the Siyata Dishmaya represents the special gift to the person who is chozer b'tshuvah. Omer Rav Yosef, there were two things that Rav taught me about the dinim of a Sifrei Torah, and I got to tell you, both of them I think are wrong, because I can show you in a braita that is the opposite, the Tanya Tiyufta. So let me go through them one by one. One thing that Rav taught me was, Chada Hadi Omer Rav, Sefer Torah, Sheyesh Bo Shtei Te'uyot B'chol Daf V'Daf. A daf is one column of a sefer. So it doesn't mean one piece of parchment. So if it has on each, it's actually a column, in other words, on the entire page. So if each one of those daf has two mistakes on it, now we're going to see later on that what we're talking about in mistakes is missing otiyot. In order to fix a missing ot, what you do is you put the ot above the line, because it can't fit in between the otiyot that are there, you put it above the line, and that way, if it's read sort of up and then down and back down again, so then that is the way to be mitakin. So you can do that. But if you've got three te'uyot, you should not be mitakin it, because it looks ridiculous. It looks like it's spotted, and it's no longer neat, as we're going to see later. But I know that that's not true, because the Braita says it's not like that. V'tanya tiyufta. In the Braita, it says if every daf has three mistakes, you can be metakinin. And if it has four mistakes, then you have to be gonez it. And there's a Braita, this is the Braita Tana in Yesh Bo Daf Achat. But if there's even just one complete daf, we're going to see what that means by a complete daf, then you can still, it saves the whole Sefer Torah. Don't put it away into Geniza. It's too chashuv, and fix all of the other dapim because you got one beautiful daf. And it's Matzalat al Kula. Omer Rav Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marta Mishmei Rav. But that's only if most of the Sefer is written nicely. I mean, if you've got like the whole thing is really a mess, then you're not metakenet, even if you've got a whole daf that's perfect. Omalei Abayel Rav Yosef, what about if in that very daf, that is the daf that is matzelet, you don't have four mistakes, but you have three mistakes? So when it says if there's one nice daf, does that mean it's like a perfect daf? Or does that mean if it's a daf that has less than the four mistakes? So what would be the idea over there? If that daf itself has three mistakes, Yizbe Ba'ud daf, Shalosh To'uyot, my. Or Malay, well, look, it makes sense. I mean, you can fix those Shalosh To'uyot. And then your first metakenet, if you're metakenet, so then you have a daf that's kosher. So, fix it, and then it will still be matzah. Now, what we're talking about over here is chaserot. If you're talking about yeterot, that's not what we're referring to over here. That's a big machlokas. Like, what do we mean by we don't care? It says we don't care. Letlamba. I mean, so some actually learn that we don't care, and that if you have a yeterah in the Sefer Torah, you can just leave it there, and it's not a problem. Almost all of the Rishonim disagree with that approach. That's the approach that I'm looking at. And they learned the reason that we don't have an issue with it is because it's easy to be metakein. It's not as easy as it seems, because if you just simply erase the extra oat, so then you're going to have a hole in the middle of the letter, which separates in the middle of the word, which separates the word into two words, which we'll see is also absurd. So you'd have to be able to make the letters on either side longer so that they cover up that space. Well, that depends on which letters are there. I mean, you can't make all letters longer. I mean, how are you going to make a vav longer without turning it into a resh and so on? So assuming that you could cover up the space, then less lanba would be the approach, not like the Nemuka Yosef's. And what's our problem with chaserot if we can always add in an extra letter on top? It looks not nice. And that is basically something that we don't want you to do in the Sefer Torah. We're going to talk about the idea of Zekeli Vianveu, and that if you don't have a Vianveu and you're going to do something that's going to make it to be an ugly Sefer Torah, then you shouldn't even fix the Sefer Torah. You should be going Nesa. That's the reason that looking Minumar is absurd. Agra, Chamua de Rabbi Abba, Avila Yeterot Besifrei. So Agra comes to Rabbi Abba, his son-in-law, with his Sefer Torah, and he's got all of these Yeterot. So he said to him, son-in-law said to him, Lo Amran Elo Bechaserot, all of these dinim were said only about Choser because it creates the Menumer, and therefore it's a concern in Zekeli Ve'anveil. But Yeterot, like we said before, is not a problem, depending on the Shita. Either you can fix it, or you don't even need to fix it. Okay, Rabbosai. Whew. Wow. These are rich tapim with many, many sugyas. There's literally, as I told you, literally many whole books written just essentially around these few tapim for those who are going to go into the dinim of safras and want to become seifrim dafkani. You need to know these dapim very, very well. Okay, everyone. Bezrat Hashem. More exciting stuff coming up tomorrow. And we'll see you, Bezrat Hashem, with Besarot Avod then. Go to wonderful days to come.